Meet Ben Green, teacher, broadcaster, and family man. From his humble beginnings upstate New York to discovering his love for media, Ben merged his passion with his purpose. I'm Sergio Gregorio, and you're listening to The Surge Experience. All right, Mr. Ben Green. So you have a very interesting and dynamic story and life. We were talking during the pre-interview, of course. Yeah. You were born in Utica, New York.
Small town. Upstate New York.
Yeah.
In a town, I'll say they're called New Hartford.
Yeah, New Hartford.
Yeah.
Tell us all about Utica.
Yeah, I grew up there. I was born a baby child now. And here's the funny thing about Utica. And it tells you the climate. I was born in 1959. Black parents, baby being delivered. Father's name is Benjamin Isaac Green Jr. That's how they signed him in. Mother's name is Elizabeth Brown, a.k.a. Betty Brown. You would figure on my birth certificate, you would put Benjamin Isaac Green III.
Sure.
That follows it. See, you say sure. So why do ignorant white folk write Benjamin Isaac Green Jr.? The name wow. I'm stuck with technically because they couldn't get it together.
Mm. Well, you can change it.
Costs money now, but right now I got to change a lot of things.
Right.
Why should I have to pay for what the mistakes they made?
Right.
I saw that in college.
How do you even begin to prove that? Well, you can prove that you're the third, but how do you prove that they knew that you were the third? You know, I mean, I don't know.
They signed in when you came to the hospital, you had to put out your ID because you were black.
Is that right?
59.
Okay.
No civil rights yet.
Wait, so what, others weren't required to present an ID under those circumstances? 1959? I'm not coming from a place of ignorance. It's just it's hard to, you know, normally when we think about.
According to my mom, they had to make sure who was who.
Sure.
Is this the father?
Right.
Why you asking me? You didn't ask that white lady sitting there.
Okay.
I'm always telling her how she was ticked off trying to do it. Why you asking her questions?
Okay.
My fourth child.
Yeah.
I've been there before.
So you're the fourth.
I'm the last.
You're the last. The fourth and the last. And so how long did you live in Utica, New York? Or I'm sorry, New Hartford.
New Hartford. Oh, that's Utica's
Utica,
town,
New York.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, in the area, right. The town. So that was a local borough of Utica, you know. But yeah, I lived there till, let me see, about third grade, which means, what was I, 8, 9? I remember moving. My mother said, we're moving because there were some crazy things happening in Utica.
Tell me about it.
People getting stabbed and murdered, fights with families. Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember coming out of the house. When we moved, we lived in the projects. My mother got a better job. We moved into an apartment in a house. Still shared a bedroom with my brother, and the girl shared their room. My mother had her own room. Mm. But when we did that, we walked to school. I remember that. It seemed like a half a mile.
Mm.
You know, the busing situation in Utica, I guess it was there, but I didn't get it till I came to New York with busing.
So by busing, you mean school buses to get to school?
Yes.
Okay.
That type of thing. Right.
Right.
But yeah, I remember the trip because my uncle, her brother, drove. So I sat up, you know, in the passenger seat with him because I was, you know, younger. It was awesome. I can remember, remember that long drive, just one of the memories. Came to New York City. My mother had this small apartment. And I remember the one school I went to, PS19, I think it was like third. Is the end of second, yeah, beginning of third. That's what it was.
And where is
Queens, New York.
In Queens, okay.
Yeah, we were on Corona, Queens, and I was in near Junction Boulevard in the school, PS19. And I remember being there, and, you know, that was the change because on that side of town, it was predominantly white, Italian, Irish.
Sure.
There were some blacks, so I was one of the.
So we're in mid-60s now.
Yes, this is, okay. Yeah, 60s.
Oh, wow.
Definitely.
There's a lot going on in New York City, particularly in Queens, particularly with housing.
Yes.
During that time.
Yeah, we were lucky where we were. You know, there were some apartments in urban areas, predominantly black neighborhood. black and Hispanic. Yeah. This was during the early starting of the Puerto Rican influence coming into New York. Yeah,
sure.
And the reason why I say that, when I came there, I was in third grade. Then I went to fourth grade. Remember the teacher, Ms. Veit, PS 143, which is now called the Louis Armstrong School. Mm-hmm. All right. PS 143 in Corner, Queens is near Grand Central Parkway, right across the street from then Shea Stadium.
Okay.
Which is now Citi Field.
Yes, Citi Field.
So, you know, we were indoctrinated to being Mets fans.
And my dad was a Mets fan.
Because they
were indoctrinated.
Know, we had free tickets. Come on. Right. We had free tickets, and that's all you knew.
Right.
We knew of the Yankees, but psst.
Right.
No love.
Be careful. Right.
No, but come on. We.
Oh, Queens, Bronx. Yeah, right, Queens, right.
Right. You know. But we knew of them, but we cheered them on too because they were New York teams. We cheered on the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
New York teams.
Sure.
The Giants weren't developed then.
Do you remember feeling any. Like a marked difference between your life as a young person in Utica versus your life as a young person in Queens. Did you feel the difference?
Oh, there's a major difference.
Yeah.
You know, in Utica, slow.
Slow? Really?
Life was slow. So that's why your cousins got creative. This is how creative we were, right? There was a park you can go to, but when we go to do a picnic, guess where we went? To the cemetery. They had better grass.
Are you? You gotta be kidding me.
No.
What did you do? What did you do in the cemetery?
That's what the plots were. The grass where they didn't have any plots.
Yeah.
That was the best grass to have a picnic. You had land. You could play there. That's how much we thought outside the box. Because the regular parks, right? You had little grass, crappy, and then a lot of white people were there, and so we had to choose and pick. So there, nobody around.
Yeah.
We go and play football and stuff. In the cemetery.
And nobody bothered you.
Who's going to bother you in the cemetery?
I don't know. The cemetery keepers.
Please, they know. Those kids smart. They found a place to play.
Wow. Did you tip cows?
No. They didn't. Cows. Those are cows. Karen, don't step there. Too late.
I know you talked about the experience of being misidentified, I guess, so to speak, on your birth certificate. But what was your sense as a young person of race relations in Utica?
Already?
Yes.
I got that.
Yes.
Second grade. Neighbor around the corner. White girl, blonde hair. You're chocolate. How am I supposed to process that? That's the first race relation that can... What do you mean chocolate? You're not like me. And I said, thank you. Like, she didn't understand that. I was throwing shade at that age.
Right.
No, because I'm black. Oh, yeah, you're chocolate. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Right.
No, but you're chocolate.
Oh, she didn't see that as good.
Right.
So she didn't just see difference. She saw herself as better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not like me.
Yeah. What was the motivation behind your parents' decision to move to Queens?
People getting killed, bad neighborhoods.
Oh, you did
and
say
they
want
to be influenced. Yeah,
sure,
so
sure.
And then my mother was a single mom working. Mm-hmm. So she said, we got to get the heck out of here.
Oh.
So we're moving on up.
Okay. Okay.
You know, so she came to New York where her auntie, Trinidadian.
Are you from Trinidad?
No, my aunt is.
Okay.
Is from through our family.
Okay.
Aunt Perry, that she remembered.
Right.
Right? Came up.
I feel like I want some doubles all of a sudden.
She told him. Right. And she told him about an apartment not far from where she lived.
Uh-huh.
And we moved there and found some other cousins who lived down the block.
Sure. Right.
Family. So
okay.
It was a much faster pace.
So it's four kids. What's the age difference between you all?
There are two boys and two girls. Mm-hmm. Oldest daughter, Nadine, who passed away in 2012. Okay. The girls were a year apart.
Mm-hmm.
The boys were a year apart.
Oh.
The girls were older within 4 years.
Okay.
The boys.
Okay.
The boys were left-handed. The girls were right-handed.
Oh, wow.
Mom ambidextrous, but at the time chose more the left hand.
Okay. Okay.
She found that out.
So you and your brother are a year apart.
Yes.
And so, okay, so you guys probably did a lot together, played together, did join you in the cemetery.
Younger.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, please. They're the ones who brought me there. Things changed when we came to New York.
Yeah. Tell me about that. You probably weren't hanging out in the cemetery in Queens.
No, no.
Right.
No, we had a park. I remember 143 Park near my school.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, they didn't have the grass park. It was concrete park.
Right.
Monkey bars made of metal. Okay. Seesaw. Swings.
Seesaw. Yeah.
Okay. The basketball courts. The handball,
handball courts.
Come on right. now. That's what brought me in.
I knew it was coming. Okay.
Smacking our hands today, swelling, right. drinking Yoo-hoo in the summertime.
Like, do people anywhere else outside of New York City play handball? I mean, I imagine probably like Rhode Island, maybe Connecticut, this whole. But know. That's not yeah. a thing.
They don't understand. I thought
it's not a thing elsewhere.
You would think people in California would do
no.
that.
No. They're surfing.
Tennis, anyone?
Right.
Sorry about that, Cali people.
No, right, right, yeah, right.
The, you know, any urban area, maybe New York, Philly, mm-hmm. handball maybe, you know, the mm-hmm. closest, mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Skelly?
Skelly, on the street. You, yes. you know, making the squares and stuff.
Right, right.
Hopscotch.
What is it? Yes. It was you something know? Else. What is it?
Double Dutch?
Double Dutch, of course. I mean, I didn't play it, but everyone
oh,
around
no,
me.
Oh, no, I tried jumping.
You tried to jump, and you mess up the
rhythm. Says, get out of here.
Game over.
Right.
Right.
But yeah, we had street games. You take bottle caps, put gum
right.
in it, dirt in
yes.
it, and you make things in it. And
red light, green light.
Red light,
one,
green light,
three.
One, two, three.
Yes.
Mother may I?
Mother
yes,
may
you may.
I.
Remember
yes,
those?
Tag.
I had tickets, right.
Yeah.
Jax.
We don't have that anymore.
Jax taught you how to count.
Yes.
Mother may I taught you manners.
Right.
And when you didn't do your manners, you had to start all over again. Mm. Hello. Just like in life.
Man, you're taking me back.
Please, come on now.
And none of that exists today.
Ooh, when you talk about the, you know, I use references. They go, "What's that?" I'm like, "Oh, you can't."
Oh my gosh!
Me. So I have to stop. Let's stop everything. Time to rewind to teach you about some morals in life.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But then, so you moved? Did you say Corona? Was it
Corona Queens?
Now, there was a documentary online. I don't know if you saw it mm-hmm. or it still is online. It was. About the transformation of, I think, Rosedale or Rochdale, Queens
yep,
in the
yeah, Jamaica,
70s
yeah.
or early 80s.
Is that the white flight when more
yes.
affluent,
so have you seen it?
Affluent
okay.
black folks came?
Yes. And there was, shockingly, I know, resistance.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering. I don't know what Corona was like back when you were there. If it was anything like
Corona
that.
Corona was an early, starting to begin melting pot. Mm. There were some white folks, but it was like,
okay.
like when I grew up there, right?
Yeah.
Italian friends, Jewish mm-hmm. friends. So I knew the Jews, all about the Jewish friends, about
sure.
their religion stuff. The yeah. Italian people, how the mothers had to make sure you were good friends with their sons when they got to know who you were.
Mm.
Then you can come over and have a nice plate of
that's interesting.
You know, pasta, whatever the hell. Yeah, because no trust.
Right. Come Both my now. Neighbors in Brooklyn growing up uh-huh. were Italian because mm-hmm. The community I grew up in, prior to us moving in the mid-80s, right. I think it was mostly Italian and some Puerto Rican.
Yes, yes.
And then the Italians started to move, I don't know, east.
Away.
Over, into Queens more. Because I was two blocks from Queens.
Right. Oh, right. You were the
borderline. I was on
the
borderline.
Yes. yes, yes.
Right? And it was very nice. And the thing is that the Italians were replaced with similarly situated Puerto Rican families
yes.
and, you know, maybe some Caribbean, mostly Puerto Rican.
Right.
But these
right.
were all two family homes and everyone mm-hmm. kept their properties
sure.
up with it. There was no,
of course, no.
disintegration of the
no.
community.
You cut your grass.
Or deterioration.
You
yeah.
took out your garbage.
Right.
You know, you respected
right.
your property.
Right.
Because it meant who you were.
Sure.
If your house where you live like trash, people saw you as trash.
Absolutely. You know, Michelle Obama talks about in Becoming about
yes.
growing up on the South Side and how, you know, her family mm-hmm. experienced something similar. They moved right. in and then others moved out. And she
white
talks
flight.
About mm-hmm. how she was like she met some people who moved out of the community.
Right.
She's like, you all moved away from me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about that.
Right. When you talk about, oh, y'all don't know that. Why'd you leave?
Sure.
Fear of.
What is the fear?
Public enemy. Fear of a black planet. Dun, dun, dun.
Is that the fear?
Ooh, think about it. Fear of. You're not like us.
Yeah.
Just, they assume you're not as good as them.
Mm-hmm.
Think you're going to bring down those who own property.
Sure.
Oh, they're going to bring down our property value. How are they going to bring it down?
Right.
Because you thinking what? We have no
well,
money, number one. You right. don't. You think we don't know how to keep up our things when for years we've done that, especially coming from Africa?
Right. Right.
We created our own, had our own until, someone just like you
yeah.
came to take us away from that.
Well, unfortunately, in real estate, it's all about demand and perception.
Yes.
And the people who are the majority, and historically that's been white people, get to determine what is valuable based on what they want. So in turn, if you have groups of people who are like, we don't want to live there because people who don't look like us are coming in, then the value drops. It's not a right. function of the people no. moving in. It's nothing
There's
inherent
no data that
right,
proves
about them
that.
That's making the value go down. It's the thinking of the collective about no. this group of people moving in.
And when you okay. say collective,
yeah.
we see that as, oh, they are society.
Yeah.
They're speaking from everyone.
Right.
But if you break down the numbers in the neighborhood, oh, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. you're only 34%.
Mm-hmm.
Your area is growing,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they fear because they no longer have the voice to determine unless somebody from that
so control
growing yeah control. Growing decides to run for office as they did because yeah. they're going, I'm not being heard,
yeah,
and they want to like, well, shoo, just hang in there,
yeah,
we'll hear you,
yeah.
we don't have time to hang in there,
yeah,
things are happening in our neighborhood that we do not like,
yeah.
just like you,
right. Right. Well, you know. So you stayed in Corona, what, your whole childhood through young adulthood?
From my young adult, right? Really, from tween, mm-hmm. as a young kid, tween, young teenager. And then I went to college in 77.
Mm.
So I still lived in Corona even when I graduated.
Wow.
I came out and within 2 years, you know, I was introduced to, okay, there are apartments here. I need to move out. No longer to be, you know, my mom, you know, she's good for herself. I need to find an apartment because I'm growing. I got to learn how to be even more independent coming out of college. I was very independent in college for the years I spent there. I'll tell you about that. My survival, people went to college for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to see for 8 years.
Where'd you go to school, Ben?
I went to I went to school. You probably heard of this small college in upstate New York, Syracuse University.
So you went, right? Yes, I have heard of Syracuse. but so you went back upstate.
Yes.
Why Syracuse?
It was near my hometown.
It was near your hometown.
No,
yeah.
Mainly they had a program there. I wanted to be a black filmmaker.
Okay. Okay.
And my dreams got crushed during my first semester of becoming a black filmmaker.
How so?
Well, as you know, Syracuse University costs money. I got in, I wrote a very well essay. I got some money from the government, loans and stuff, but I still didn't have enough money.
Okay.
So I knew at the end, before the end of the school year, I had to work hard and save up some money to go. So I was dually enrolled in the School of Arts and Sciences. No problem there. I could write, I can be a historian, no problem. And then the School of Newhouse, I went into for film. I registered for my film class. In my film class, they said, oh, you, and it was exciting. You can shoot film with a camera. You can rent equipment. Yay! So when I took the class and they told me that the film and the renter would cost $200.
Yeah.
I don't have $200.
Mm.
I got
and that was above and beyond tuition and
oh,
books
yeah,
and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That was just extra.
Yeah. I had nothing. So I started working in the dining halls. Cleaning, you know, stuff to save some money. Because I realized, yeah. oh, wait a minute. I'm not going to survive. Where am I going to buy if I need something for snacks? My mother can send me stuff, but, you know, she never liked that.
Mm.
My grandmother who lived in Utica would send me cookies and stuff with some money, but still didn't have it.
Yeah, I worked in the dining hall at Syracuse, because that's my alma mater.
Oh, yeah.
For,
and you realize
it was probably like a semester. It was really quick, because they seemed very strict. First of all, you couldn't really take food, which was like, okay, this ain't
no,
worth it for
legally,
me.
Legally, right.
I mean, it was like, you couldn't, like, steal a muffin or take a muffin. And it was one of the few jobs that, you know, as a student, what
yes.
we call it, college work study, whatever,
mm-hmm.
where you actually really had to work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no.
Couldn't, like, it wasn't really work study in the way that I do it, like at the library.
Right. I couldn't get work study, so I was being paid as a regular job.
Oh, wow.
Time, the work study kids got the job. What was left?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you could do this. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. But see, I am a leader. It's a part of my blood. How do I know? I'm working in the dish room, and I'm realizing, oh, this has a disorder here. The way they had things organized. Like,
okay.
you take the tray, you got the mess here, and you put it here, and the other person working
yeah.
there. People bumped each other. I had to organize the dish room. You get the trays, you put them over here. You get the junk off the trays. Then you dump the stuff over there so we can put the
right.
plates here, this over here. I had to organize it because, there are people there who never worked in their life.
Yeah.
I worked since I was a junior. Well, I've been working since I was 14.
Okay.
Had a newspaper route, you know?
Yeah.
I worked for people. I cut lawns.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how to do things. Sell lemonade. All that stuff I knew.
Yeah.
Sold candy. Come
yeah.
on now.
Yeah. So tell me more about this desire for filmmaking. When did you first know that is what you wanted to do?
First time I watched a couple of black movies. Noticed that movies designed black exploitation, you would say, but someone featuring a black superhero, unquote, unquote, that we see, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was like, I remember Shaft. My mom told us about Shaft, right, you know. Right. I had the soundtrack first because I couldn't go see the movie.
Right.
I was like, this is a movie? Gordon Parks. And my mother showed me photos of Gordon Parks. I'm like, wait a minute, these are black folks. He's capturing the history of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My mom said, yeah, you can shoot your movie and tell your story. Oh, I didn't know that.
Right.
Because I thought I had to be white to do that.
Because
I didn't see anyone there who looked like me,
mm-hmm.
who sounded like me,
yeah.
and produced anything
yeah.
that I could relate to.
Right.
You know, cartoons is one thing.
Right.
But movies, you
right.
know?
Right.
Back in the 70s, you had movies, and then you see some folks starting to pop up in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, oh, I want to make films
mm-hmm.
for my people.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell a story.
You could tell a story. Mm-hmm. But then at Syracuse, you were telling me you got involved in a couple of radio stations.
Well, yeah.
Right.
I'm glad that option popped up. When my heart broke and I couldn't take the film class, I'm walking through the School of Newhouse. I heard music coming
through. Was it called the School of Newhouse then?
Newhouse School, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Newhouse
School.
1 and 2.
Yeah, okay.
Newhouse School.
You call it the School of Newhouse. I've never heard anyone refer to it.
Yeah, it was called Newhouse School.
The Newhouse School. There we go. Yeah. Okay.
You have the School of Education. You have the School of Management, you know?
Right, right.
You know it as the Newhouse School.
The
what
Newhouse
really,
School, yeah.
the S.I. Newhouse School, the
right.
full name.
That's right.
You know, that was the impressive part.
Yes.
Newhouse, yes. Yeah. He designed it. Was it Pei? Yeah, I am Pei. Designed it. You had to know all that stuff.
Okay.
So, and I took Comm 101.
Okay.
Communication, intro.
Right.
So, when I heard that music, I'm like, oh, that's, and I saw the student, I'm like, wow. You know, the flashback, because as a child, I wanted to be a DJ so bad that when songs came on, back then you had those little rectangular cassette recorders you put a cassette in.
Yes.
I would put it next to the speaker. And then when the music began, I said, you're listening to Ben Green Radio.
Right. And who was listening to you?
Hey.
Did you have an audience?
Yeah. My mom and then my friends. Look what I did on the cassette here. You did that? You know, some of my nerdy friend.
Right.
To the point where, you know, I joined the audio visual squad, AV squad.
Where?
In middle school.
Okay.
Sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade.
Wow. Nice that you had one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We learned how to take audio from some online thing
mm-hmm.
that we recorded on reel to reel.
Yeah.
There were lessons and things that we did, and we played. And then we showed 16mm film. I learned how to edit 16mm film. Like if it broke, you edit.
I remember the splicing.
Yeah. We played movies during auditorium.
Yeah. Do schools not do that anymore? No, do you have
not on a regular basis?
Wow.
No, only when they have special performances.
Do students still have to pledge allegiance to the flag? Like
in some schools, I don't do that at my school. They don't.
Is that right?
Now. We should, but we have like, at my school, we have a pledge. It's called the College Achieve Pledge.
Oh my God.
And it's a pledge that tells, you know, basically it says, you know, as a College Achieve Scholar, I will do my best. You know, I will be good even when people are not looking. I will help people to be the best out of themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and I always be positive and work in my community.
Right.
And there's a whole list of things you say
right.
that I say because I do the announcements now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then and that's their pledge, and we look for that all day.
Wow.
And we have a core value of the week. Last week's core value was community.
Right.
Before that, it was innovation.
Right.
We have different things that that we pledge to be successful.
Right. And to be clear to our listeners, mm-hmm. you are currently a fifth grade science teacher.
I'm
so that's what you're referring
grade.
To. And
yes.
I want to get to that.
Sure.
But I want to go back just briefly, you know, talk about broadcast and how that developed, because you were at you were studying communications in college,
yes.
and then you left did you leave the film program because of
yes because cost? I had no money. Yeah, I had no
okay.
money to do. I didn't see any future there.
And so you ended up studying.
So what I did was I took communication courses.
Okay.
And then my major got switched to Afro American Studies.
Oh, okay.
Because I said at least do that. I got some basis where
mm-hmm.
I can learn and teach about black history
right.
for the things that I didn't learn until middle school to high school about black history when they had a book.
Mm-hmm.
So when they had a department, I was like, whoa, I need to find out more.
Yeah.
Because I don't know enough.
Right.
And to open my eyes to a lot of things that I heard about, but didn't know facts and details. Now you hear, oh yeah, this massacre happened, or we know that in certain towns and cities, you know, especially Tulsa, the Tulsa Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out how did that all come about.
Yeah.
I knew it happened, but how and why?
Did your career aspirations change as a result of switching your major? Or were you still planning to do something in communications?
Oh, no. In the back of my mind, film was still always there. Like, I'm like, okay, for now, I'm going to learn how to take what I'm learning now and eventually maybe tell somebody who can make a film about it if I can't do it.
Yeah.
So I never lost that taste.
Okay.
Because I always loved movies.
Wow.
So I watched movies and imagined myself creating it, right, how I would do it, if not better.
Sure.
You know?
Right.
So when black movies came out, I was like, yes, there is a future. That's what kept my motive alive.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. When you had these independent people making movies,
yeah,
and someone black is in it, starring in it,
mm-hmm,
you know, not a side part,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not a maid, not a butler. Okay?
That's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, someone,
as soon as you said maid, I thought of the 80s sitcoms. All the black people were like displaced and disconnected from their families.
Well, here's the good thing.
Webster, too. Give me a break.
All right, right, right. Oh, yeah,
different strokes. I mean, what is going on here?
I know. It's like, and we never saw their parents. No, did they die?
Where?
Something
in which?
Crashed it. Different strokes, the two boys.
No,
See,
I think the mom died. Yeah. You never heard about the dad? I don't think. And it was the mom's wish that her sons be adopted by Mr. Drummond. Perhaps she worked as a maid for him. I don't remember.
Right.
You know, if she died or something like that. And so he took them on and gave them better life.
Right. Shows like Good Times. I could relate. Like, okay, I know somebody who lived like that.
Okay.
I did, not in a tenement like that, but much smaller.
Yeah.
You know, surviving. You know, single mom.
Yeah.
Four kids.
Yeah.
You know, instead of dinner, we had made sandwiches. Peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, whatever
we had. We either had soup or pasta.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about, because you were in college in the mid-80s.
Yes. Latter 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Right, and so you wanted to be a black filmmaker. But obviously there was a reason for that. So it's what you saw in cinema wasn't what you wanted to see.
Right, because I'm I know we're... In my mind, I'm going, I know we're doing stuff.
Right, but we just weren't seeing it.
And the good thing, too, is that I paid attention in school where we had current events.
Yeah.
Where you had to take an article from the newspaper,
mm-hmm,
paste it onto a lined paper, and you write what it was about.
We did that too.
Yeah, current events.
I'm feeling old now. Is this is this an old thing that's not done anymore either?
No, that helps you to be informed about your community.
We gave that up too, huh?
I don't see that's not happening. That's what kept you alert. And we watched news that night. My mother sat down, and you knew there was an introduction. Oh, the news is on because you heard that stinger. Ding, ding, ding. You know, I'm Roger Grimsby.
Okay, I know the name, right?
You know, or who was the CBS?
Walter Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite. Come on,
CBS.
Come on, The Voice.
Right.
So because me loving radio, so, wow.
Yeah.
And you took them for everything they said. You being young, you weren't able to say, okay, this, you know, this is 100% truth, but you know, they telling you a story, giving you their perspective,
mm-hmm,
when there are other elements that it could be involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, oh man, this is serious.
Well, there was so much less competition, and
yes,
and we all as a group had so much more attention.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we were just focused. Mm-hmm. We read books.
Yes.
We had encyclopedias.
Oh man!
People, kids please wrote book reports.
Encyclopedias, volumes.
I don't even know if young people are reading books these days.
Oh, they are. They have chapter books. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh no, they've made it. Those who are in tune.
Yeah.
They got chapter books, 300+ pages.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones who know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then to help those who may have some reading disabilities, they do have them with pictures to help correlate to the story, so they can make sense.
Right.
Everybody's thinking on a different level,
mm-hmm,
and it makes sense. You should be able to tell me what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You should tell me the character. You can tell from reading it, if you don't see a picture, how old is this character?
Yeah.
Where do they live?
Right.
You know.
So what did you end up doing in the communication space after college?
So after college, well, while in college, I got, like I said, I got into radio.
Right, you got into radio.
Big time. And then the whole production, when I learned that. First of all, I thought I wasn't good enough.
Mm.
Because I said there's someone showed, oh, you're going to be, this is what we do. And I was like, I can't do that. And black woman showed me. And I was like, oh, she goes, you could do this.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I needed.
Mm.
I got in the studio, made my mistakes. Okay, you made a mistake. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
You gonna give up?
Yeah.
She kicked into my ego.
Mm.
I ain't a quitter.
Right.
Went in there, got it right. I became a great splicer of audio.
Sure.
Putting radio together, and then.
And where'd you work?
I worked at WAER.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I didn't work. I didn't get paid.
Okay.
So I volunteered. Hold on. But yeah, okay. Yeah, I didn't get paid. But I did get hired to work at the local PBS station as a board operator from the work I had done at WAER.
Right.
They paid me top dollar because I had experience from my freshman year.
Okay.
I had over a year experience.
What was top dollar back then?
$15 an hour.
Oh, that is top dollar.
Think about it then. Yes.
It's actually not bad.
That was very
well, bad. I mean, because that's, isn't that minimum wage today?
Yes.
Wow. That was a lot of money back then.
And I worked.
Because I remember when I was growing up, it started in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, minimum wage was $4.25.
Yeah, right, no.
So if you were doing 15 in the mid 80s.
When he said $15 an hour, I'm here.
And you're doing what you love.
Yeah, exactly. I was in there working the board. I was working the board audio for the announcers. Now I was just in touch the board. They had a union.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't in that. No, I did. I had to go to New York City and take my test for operating a radio station.
Yeah.
I remember that.
There was a test?
Yeah, you had a test you took. Okay. So I had to show that card. You're right.
Yeah.
So and that's another reason why I got paid top dollar. I had my license to be able to know how to turn on the transmitter and turn it down when you need to, like an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got paid too.
Mm.
I was smart enough to do that.
Mm.
And that's the only way they could hire me.
Okay.
Because I would be the only one at the station, like overnight, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So if something happened, you got to know how to shut the system down and bring it back up. And then I was a switcher. A switcher in radio, when you watch TV and they go from the live program to a commercial, there's something that moves it, goes to black, and then the current. Mm-hmm. I was doing that.
Do we still use switchers or is that all?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Digitally wise, yeah.
Okay.
It's the same type of thing, but now it's digital.
Because so much has changed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then that's what I learned about. Oh, that's how they do it.
Right.
And I know there's 5 seconds before the commercial comes on, 5 seconds before it comes back.
Right, right.
And then if you, there's a pattern I watch, too, when you watch TV.
Yeah.
Like, if you're watching, what's a TV show? If you're watching American Idol, right? You see 7 commercials it could be.
Mm-hmm.
Food, car.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last 2 commercials are the commercials from the local station, like ABC TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know you're getting closer, they're going to come back. It's usually the last 60 seconds.
Oh, I never really paid attention.
There's a pattern. You go out.
And you come back
internationally,
in.
Nationally, locally.
Look at that.
And then your local TV station.
Okay.
Whatever show, they're promoting their shows.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then that's how they lead you back to being home. I was like, what a pattern.
Wow.
See, paying attention.
No, I never noticed.
Definitely. So yeah, after doing radio in there, and I thought about many of my friends who were working to do radio outside of Syracuse.
Mm.
And I realized, oh, wait a minute, when you get out of this market, you have to go into another market.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to prove yourself all over again. If you don't get ratings, you get fired. And then you gotta go to another. I'm like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I said, well, I'm a board operator. I can get a job at any station working a board.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came out, I got a job working at WMCA AM, talk radio, weekend board operator. Because you don't have many people who know that skill.
No, not at all.
So, and I got top dollar.
Right.
Coming out of Syracuse, working for that radio station for over 3 years, I asked for it.
Right. What were you doing with your love and desire for filmmaking at this point while you're working in radio?
So when I'm working in radio, I was doing something that I always did as a child, drawing. When I worked in radio, I drew cartoon things about what's happening in the station. And I hung them up in our lunchroom. And they laughed. It was fun. I'm like, okay, I keep track of that stuff. Still kept movie type things in my mind. So, you know, the years go on, and then the art of networking I was doing, keeping in contact with my Syracuse alums and friends. This was before the internet. They had something called email. I remember when I worked for WCBS AM radio station, News Radio 88, I was, you know, entering contracts, that stuff. And I remember my finance guy comes, I got an email because the Army had that.
Yeah.
That's how they communicated against, you know, lines.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I can't wait till we get. He showed me to me. I'm going, this is nothing but, you know, standard letters, block letters.
Yes.
It wasn't fascinating at all.
Right. I remember. Well, I didn't use email until my first semester of college. That's when I was introduced to it. This is 94.
Oh, you had a call.
And I remember, you know, looking at the syllabus, and we were all like, okay, what is this email thing? Because the professor wanted to be communicated with that way. We're like, why must we learn this new thing just to communicate with you? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give the assignments on email. Like, really? it was very dot matrixy back then. From what I remember. It was just like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
And but it was proof that you were paying attention to class,
right?
And you're able to hand your stuff in on time. They could time clock.
Yes, I don't know. I don't remember. Were we able to do attachments back then? When the email,
no, you had to write everything. You had to write. You couldn't add photos and nothing.
You couldn't, right?
It was all type it out.
Okay.
And then you had to type out and give answers. If he gave you questions,
right?
You had a question one, put the answer question so they know. Oh yeah.
Okay.
So it's more labor intensive for them too.
Right.
That's why they were ticked off when you didn't submit it. And I see them. Yeah, you won't get an A, you won't get a B, but I might give you a C.
Yeah. Right.
The more you tick me off.
Right. Right.
But yeah, So I was doing that. We were doing groups groups of email, keeping in contact with folks, call them on the phone, checking in on them, leaving messages when you can.
Yeah.
All right, on machines.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Right. When you come back, I play my messages back, answering machine.
Oh my gosh, you're taking me back.
Hi, Ben. I'm calling you. It's Tuesday, 3 o'clock.
Right. You know? Thursday, 4:10 p.m. Message from, right?
That,
even if we did, we even have that.
That's what you had.
That's digital. I had the old school answering machines. Right. Okay. So I'm just, that's like 10 years later.
When they had it. Right.
Told okay. You I remember that. And I think there was a little like cassette or tape in there.
Yeah, cassette. And you should run out of space for people who couldn't realize, oh, am I speaking now?
Right.
Because you only get 60 seconds.
Right.
They'll cut you off. People forget. They're still talking.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got cut off in the last. Yeah, she did. Now you got 5 messages from them because they couldn't get the hang of it. You know, rolling up your tape in your time.
Right.
But then something wonderful happened in the early 90s. The internet.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the transformation, the change.
Yes.
From media to education.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how you ended up being a 5th grade science teacher.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Where you been? The Surge Experience is bringing you interviews with thoughtful people on some interesting topics. We go deep, and sometimes not so deep. Check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and other platforms. We're also on DC Radio 96.3 HD. Visit us at thesurgeexperience.com.
You're 5th grade school teacher. You teach science. I didn't even realize this, and I've known you for several years. How did that come to be?
So during the year that I was going to get married in 2006, a lot of my friends said, you know, you need to go into teaching because they don't have enough black teachers. They need to see someone who look like them.
Right.
Meanwhile, young black boys and girls running havoc in the urban schools, the ones who have behavioral problems, they have no one they can relate. They can't relate to these white men or white women.
Mm.
And you don't want them to see them as the even for them, you know?
Sure.
The one that bring them down. Because it's a whole different mentality. And I switched in 2007. because I got married in 2006. In 2007, in the spring, I started to volunteer to see what it was like.
So you teach fifth grade now. What's the youngest or the earliest?
I began teaching first grade.
Oh, my God.
But the youngest grade I taught was kindergarten in Orange at first.
It's interesting because when I think of kindergarten, I always think of female teachers.
Right.
And, you know, and that's white female, black female. Mm-hmm. You rarely think of male teachers when you think about kindergarten teachers.
Very
and you
rarely.
Certainly don't think about black male teachers. So you, I have to assume, were not the exception, but, you know, one of a few or if
in that school or the only I was one. Teaching. I was only male because me and I had an assistant. She was a teacher's assistant, black female.
Yeah.
And the other kindergarten class was a older black woman who'd been teaching for a certain amount of years. Mm-hmm. And I helped her out because she wasn't tech savvy.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept her going with it. You know,
Yeah.
But all the schools I've been in, I've only met one, maybe two other black kindergarten teachers in different schools. I didn't see me.
Of course.
A lot.
Right.
When I was in Plainfield at a charter school, luckily, in fourth grade, there were me and another black teacher. Then in fifth grade, was me and another Latino man.
Yeah.
No other black man teaching fifth grade.
Right. So I'm wondering.
They're all in the high school.
Right. Well, of course. I mean, not of course.
No,
but
you understand the concept,
right. I get that. But I always wonder, you know, because it's when you're that young, when your kids are that young, mm-hmm. parents, many parents, men and women alike,
right.
prefer, I think it's still the case, that their caretakers be
right.
women. So
right.
I'm wondering what the response was from the parents of the teachers, of the mm-hmm. kids you taught, especially the kindergarten.
What did you
sense?
Oh, yeah, they liked it because there's a father figure. A lot of them don't have father figures you know, either living with them or even now with my fifth graders. A lot of parents are separated.
Okay.
I'm saying my father's house, I'm doing, you know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, but the other problem, as much as they need black males,
mm-hmm.
when we give authority, all of a sudden that's a problem.
Sure.
The female can get away with raising her voice and being, you know, straightforward.
Uh-huh.
You know, what do you call that? What's the word we use for being strict and making sure our parents would do it for us, do it to us?
Discipline. Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
A disciplined voice.
Right.
You know, oh, he says you're yelling at him. Oh, I'm glad you think that. Why would I be yelling at your child? I'm just being disciplined because I have to repeat the rules that have been up on the wall from the day they came in.
Yeah.
And they're not getting it. So I say it in a stern voice.
Mm.
When a woman says it, it's acceptable. The man says it, now you have a fear. Doesn't work that way.
All men? You think that's
Oh, black men.
Black men. Really, yeah.
Because the music teacher is white and he's stern. I didn't tell you to play that note, but you ain't telling your mom that he screamed at you.
You know, I was just thinking about this issue, not in the context of education, but I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know why I was thinking about this, but when we think about anger, like mm-hmm. white male anger is commonly accepted.
Yes.
I don't know the name of the sportscast or not the sportscaster, she was a coach who just died. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I know him.
And the footage they're showing of him.
His thing was biting into the towel. Night,
right. Then it was like, yes, exactly. And it was this footage that they're showing him throwing a chair on the court. And I'm like, and that's acceptable?
Right.
And I think about like.
His style.
Right. It's his style. And I think about, remember Morton Downey Jr.?
Hello.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Think about also MSNBC, January 7th, the day after January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name? With Mika, is it Joe?
Yeah, Joe.
And he gets on the air mm-hmm. and he curses.
Yeah, he did it the other day, yeah.
And he did it again?
He did it the other day. He called somebody, he said, that guy's just being an a-hole.
Gosh. He used the F word, though, on January 7th. He was like,
There's a 7-second delay.
Okay.
Who's ever working in the studio is supposed to catch that.
Right, but somehow being caught, or they're like, it's going to be palatable.
Right. And what it is he still has to pay a fine, but he don't care, and I understand that.
Right. But my point is,
right.
you know, white male anger seems to have...
associated with society to be like, oh, it's okay.
Okay.
He's just angry. But yeah. black men do the same thing.
Right.
That's an angry black man. He's dangerous.
Sure. Right. Problem. So that's what I'm saying. That's what yes. I'm saying. So there's that. Seen that as a danger. You cross the line yeah. from oh. just being legitimately.
Mr. Nice guy. Right. Mr. Teacher.
Concerned and angry. Mm-hmm. As you know, you care about these kids mm-hmm. to now we're associating criminality right. with your
Ooh,
actions.
Ooh, I love that criminality.
Yeah. Right. That's a problem.
It is. It yeah. is. Oh, you want me, but you don't want me to teach your kid.
Right.
Because you can't get it done.
Right, right.
And their father can't get it done. Or their father's not here. But you need a male figure. Mm-hmm. You don't have an uncle or mm-hmm. grandfather who can do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But they are attached to me. Even when I'm angry, they understand.
Mm-hmm.
They'll cry with me
mm.
and still feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not breaking down. I'm not tearing down their ego.
Mm-hmm.
I allow them to cry and tell them, don't worry.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. That's just one lost battle. We got more battles to go. Now you're stronger.
Yeah.
And they go, okay.
Yeah.
Boom.
Wow.
That's why I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, nobody. I said, we don't kick somebody down. If you fall down, you get up.
We fall
Brush
down.
Down. We get up. Brush the dirt off your shoulder.
Yeah.
Start again.
Right.
That's, now you're stronger. You've been through that. So now you know not to go there again. That's called the lesson in life.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. How many of you going to keep falling through that hole in the wall when you walk in? That hole in the floor when you walk in? I give that demonstration. Did you walk in? Hi, how you doing? Ah! You come back the next day. See that hole? Do you still walk into it?
No. Yeah, exactly.
What do you do? And they tell me, I'm going to walk around it.
Right.
Exactly. Those are your challenges in life. And I do a thing in my classroom where I go, I move the tables around. Come to me. And when, instead of, and I see one kid will walk and climb over the, why are you climbing over?
Mm.
Walk around. Isn't that the easier way to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Find the straight and narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're going to zigzag, find the shortest point to get to me.
Mm-hmm.
To help them understand that's what life's about.
That's what life's about.
That's what I'm teaching you in class. When you fail a test, it's not over. Find out what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Learn it again. So when I give it to you again, you do better.
You do better.
Because I tell them, you're smarter than that. A lot of you are smarter than me, but you have to show and prove it to me. That's because a lot of you say things in class I haven't even thought of yet.
Mm.
And I give you props for that.
Mm. And so you were saying that you now integrate media into the classroom.
Here we go. Yes. This is the fun part. I just started this
week. Just started this. Tell me about that.
So as a part of teaching kids how to own their education, how to own the classroom, I let them know. I come in. I'm only teaching you the topic for 10 minutes. You take notes. I give you notes. I show you. You have resources.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to prove to me when I ask questions, what did you learn?
Mm.
There's a certain way you answer a question when it comes to science or for me, anything in general.
Mm-hmm.
You never answer in a generic mode.
Mm-hmm.
If I say, how do plants live? You don't say, plants live from air and sun. Aaron's son, what? What do you mean? I mean, live. How do they live? Explain.
Right.
Give me details. I taught you in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Use my scientific vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the carbon dioxide oxygen cycle, aka photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
Use that because you sound more intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you're teaching the person you're talking to. Now they feel smarter
because
you've taught them something. Now they're smiling.
Right.
Now they're hanging on to your every word because now they're like, oh, what else can you teach me?
Right.
That's what I'm teaching them. So
yeah.
And podcasting, they have Mondays and Tuesdays where they have their scripts and they got notes from their class. Or they can go back to September or October and look at the resources I have in Google Classroom, video, notes, old tests.
Mm-hmm.
That's your research to know what you can talk about using facts.
Yeah.
So when you come on Wednesday, we do a review of the class, what we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about anything in the past also. Thursdays, you and your team have to come and present your podcast. You have an executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
You have an interviewer. You have an interviewee, and you have writers.
Mm-hmm.
Each one has to come up and say, okay, executive producer is in touch with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They've been online with their scripts. That's how to keep in contact.
Mm-hmm.
I have access to see when you came in, when you clocked out, who's doing the work, who's not doing the work. It's checked.
Oh, so it's fascinating. So, I mean, really using podcasting
mm-hmm.
as a means to teach.
to teach. Yes.
So it's not even about, hey, you know, no. I'm teaching you podcasting or I'm teaching you media, but you're teaching, right. And that's the medium that
another
you use.
Skill, right?
It's another skill, but I bet you really connect with or come into contact with young people who actually want to do.
Oh, there are some who media, are
right, and they just
can't, don't even know it.
Sure.
Last year when I did it,
yeah.
This group came up with their podcast was called Beautiful Black People. They came up with their own theme song. Beautiful black people, this is our show. Beautiful black people, and here we're gonna go. Wow. We're gonna make you laugh, and I'm like, that was a jingle stuck in my head because they created that. Mm. I didn't tell them how to do that. That's the beauty that I helped bring out in them.
Yeah.
And of course, they inspired 3 other groups to come up with their own
jingle.
The judges, they came in like, hear ye, court is in session. I was like, oh. There was a group called the Ohio Feet Ticklers.
Feet Ticklers?
Yeah, that was just the name because they were being fun. So when they began laughing. Oh, I get it. See, I would never have thought of that.
Right.
They're like, hi, my name is Thomas, and welcome. I was wondering what they were doing and why were they laughing? And they said, okay, my first question. It's a part of their name. That's who they are.
Mm.
I was like, wow. I said, I gave you credit because you threw me for a loop. I didn't know that. I realized you're the Ohio Feet Ticklers. If somebody's tickling your feet, you're going to be laughing.
Mm.
I would never thought of that.
That's a very innovative name.
Yes. They were being funny, but somebody sat down and said, become who you are.
Okay.
I had the people who were the native New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. Yo, how you doing?
The native New Yorkers? That was the name of the group?
Yes. Today on my show, I'm talking here.
Right. Okay, great.
So, you know, but what it did was allow them to show them that. I said, listen, when you present, you're showing people... You're showing people, you're demonstrating your intelligence.
Mm.
But you're not doing it in a meek way, otherwise no one's going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. You can't come up and go, well, my podcast is about how people ask. But you're going to hear yourself, what? Mm-hmm. I can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
That means you lost your audience. But when you come out and ta-da, this is your showtime. This is your show. This is what you can tell people, look, I know what Mr. Green taught me.
Yeah.
He taught me, look, A, B, C, and D. Bam. Drop the mic.
Right.
And now they know that. Yes. And I said, there's going to be a healthy competition. See who has the top podcast. Mm-hmm. I said, and we're doing promotions too. We're taking photos. You're going to write your own 10-second promo. We're sending it out to the school. We have a website. Folks will be listening. I said, then, and I showed them from last year, you're going to have a surprise VIP guest. Who's going to stop by and you're going to have to interview. I can't tell you who they are, but you're smart enough to figure out how to interview somebody.
I love that.
Pictures or something. They come in, you never know. So you need to, my phrase for them is be ready so you don't have to get ready. If somebody's giving out $1 million, you go, oh, let me get a pen. By that time, they're gone. You missed your chance.
I know. Everything is, it's so quick. Like, it's almost like that with the standard, the elevator pitch.
Right.
You got.
Be ready.
A few seconds to get it out, and that's it.
Yeah, you know where your heart belongs. Let me think. Think about what? I need money because that's how you begin.
Yeah.
I would love to have $1 million because I'm doing A, B, and C. You think you can help me? That's all it takes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And all you're waiting for them is to tell me more. Now you grabbed them.
Yeah. I was just having this conversation yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So you're involved in other... initiatives or other things in the community. You have what's called, I think, a networking knowledge program is what you're calling it.
Yes.
What's that?
For years, I've been a part of a networking program that wasn't official, meaning that graduating from Syracuse University, I had to be ready for the real world. So I stayed in contact with seniors from my sophomore year, junior year, and senior year, so that when it was time for me to graduate, they guided me. When you come out, call me. Where are you looking to get a job? I said, radio. They had 3 to 4 names of people who worked in radio I can speak to. They taught me, okay, if you come for an interview, make sure your shoes are shined.
Mm.
You wear a white starched shirt with a tie. Have a jacket. Mm-hmm. Okay? Make sure you brush your teeth and your breath smells good, you know? But when you come, make sure you have at least 5 questions you want to ask them about the position, mm-hmm. the company. Be ready. Mm-hmm. You know? So my mindset was ready. My networking knowledge program, I want to teach freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors how to be ready through their college life by, you know, using the resources they have on campus to prepare them for the real world, and teaching seniors how to be ready for the real world and how to become an alum by building relationships. Freshmen through seniors will be building relationships with each other and with alumni, because those people you're building relationships with may be your next business partner. You need to think that far in advance. Mm. Because you, at your age now, you really don't want to work for someone. You want to create your company because you're that smart. Mm. That's why you're in college. Mm-hmm. You're not waiting to go work for someone. Mm-hmm. A lot of us go, we work for someone.
Yeah.
But then you realize you learned enough and they're not giving you enough for you to grow. So you start your own business.
Sure.
Hence the entrepreneurs.
Right.
So where's the best time to be an entrepreneur where you can live, learn, fail, and get the right thing done? Mm-hmm. In college. Mm-hmm. You're in that bubble. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have the right relationships externally, it's going to be a struggle. And you just might give up, and we don't accept that.
And what are you seeing with regards to the ability of young people to network? Because that has, as I understand it, and at least in my mm-hmm. observation, that has... That skill set has changed over the years.
Yes.
Right? Because now a lot of younger people, and now young is anything below 35, right. but we're talking about 20-somethings, I guess. Mm-hmm. They grew up in an era where everything is, you know, we text, we Snapchat. We,
right.
You know,
spoon-fed.
We don't talk to people.
Short sentences, if any.
Yeah. There was
incorrect grammar.
Oh, God. I didn't even think about that. There was a study that was...
teacher.
Oh, yeah, right. It was a study that was recently... Or survey, something like, right. I don't know, probably making a number up, but something like 90% of all young people have a serious fear of right. picking up the phone to talk to people.
Yes.
So how does networking work? How do you teach those skills to younger people
and
today?
And that's the problem I'm having now. I got one young lady she saw me in person. Like you, in order to teach them about networking, they need to teach you face-to-face first. Unseen, unheard, in their minds, I don't know who you are, but you think they would use the technology they've been taught. You have a search engine. Use it the right way, not for, oh, what kind of food I want? Oh, what is this for all the wrong things? Looking at your celebrity friends, you know?
Right.
Look at real life. Mm-hmm. Find somebody. Mm-hmm. Learn how to dig deep. The biggest problem is they're not digital natives. They mm-hmm. haven't been trained how to look for reliable sources online. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, how to get past the la-la, because they're the first one doesn't mean they're the correct one. Mm-hmm. Somebody paid for that to happen. Mm-hmm. You know? Trying things out. So my biggest thing, I got a young lady who is a junior majoring in, I've got Neo, something with scientific Neo. I can't think of it right now, but it's very serious. She's going to be like in the doctor area.
It is very serious.
Very serious. Yeah, she, I mean, like, it's serious stuff. Like, she's not getting a lollipop degree.
Sure.
Okay?
Right.
There's steps she's going to have to take.
Yeah.
So, but she's the star. She understands the concept because I've networked with her and she enjoys it. And she's gotten some good things out of it, knowing who to look for, who to speak to. Mm-hmm. She see immediately, oh, wow, I couldn't have done this by myself. Mm. So I told her about the program. She's my campus contact. And we're trying to bring other clubs and groups into it. So, of course, I go to where they are, Instagram. They have all the student groups, you know, they're right. putting out. Oh, these are our officers. So I send them a note. I'm inviting you to this. Mm-hmm. Crickets.
Like an invitation to be in a physical space with other people.
Crickets for them to meet me online first.
Okay.
Or to contact me. I give them my phone number, my email.
Yeah.
Crickets.
Interesting.
Oh, I follow.
But it's online. But I guess, is it the idea
directly to their service, directly to them.
But is it the idea of connecting with people online in a way that is non-traditional that would cause that resistance?
Well, I would think a lot of them are doing that. They're trying to get internships because they're not walking in the building.
Well,
to
that's
meet
what
people.
I'm saying. But are they?
Yes,
they are.
Some are. Those okay. who do have it.
Okay.
Okay. Or right. when people come there and they're looking for, they go to those opportunities face to face. So that's the thing. But when I was on campus and I see people, I sat in this one building, 119 Euclid, where a lot of the groups come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I chat with people.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. A little bit for some.
Yeah.
Because you have to start the conversation.
Oh, my gosh. That's a thing.
You know, hi, I'm Ben Green. I'm an alum here. Oh, you know. And then, you know, come on, speak to me. You're alive. Don't sit there like, okay, what next?
Yes.
They don't hunger for that external outreach because they don't
no.
know.
But they also, yeah, so the back and forth is largely missing in my experience with the few young people I deal with. It's almost like they're receptive. They'll take in what you're saying, but they don't know how to
the follow
return
up, right.
and the follow-up. And even if curiosity is there, it doesn't necessarily come
right. It's like
back. What does that mean for our workforce?
I think within our workforce, what they're looking for is the biggest problem, too, is a lot of them just want warm bodies some places.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. But the ones who are going to grow to learn something from a company or any job, when they ask you questions, they're looking for a response. And not the cookie-cutter response that they hear all the way.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And that's one of the things we're going to be teaching our seniors.
Yeah. It would seem to me that you would, as a young person today, have an advantage.
Yes.
If you are actually just taught the way that we used to be taught.
Oh,
and
yeah.
if you can get those soft skills, you are ahead of the game.
You would stand out there recognize, this program is trying to train their minds, all right, to actually become and think outside the box in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Preparing you so if and when you do want to do something on your own, how to go about it.
Yeah.
You will have people in your pocket who understand what you want to do, and they're going to connect you to people only if you show me you're serious.
Mm-hmm.
We don't connect you if you don't show that, you're going to follow up, and we'll train you how to follow up. We want you. We'll give you a chance. We'll train you. And when you fail, we'll be there. Okay, what did we do wrong? What happened?
Mm.
How can you do better? You're going to answer all the questions why you did it wrong because you're that smart.
I love it.
I'm not going to spoon feed you answers. No, the answer's right here in front of you. I'm going to show
right.
you. Here's the puzzle. It fell. Let's put the pieces back together one by one. You tell me what piece you have, what corner it goes to.
Mm-hmm.
Center, middle, this didn't fit. Keep turning it around until it fits. Ah, now we got it back together again. How do we keep it together?
That is exciting.
So I'm excited pulling all this together so that, you know, next year in 2024, I retire. And I want to be more than doing the daily work. That's why I'm trying to train these people to do the daily work.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing someone who looks like them.
Mm.
And those who are, you know, those for me, those who graduate in the 20s, they're younger, and they got time to help train. And help themselves too to open up to other things. That's the deal, definitely.
So what's next for Ben Green?
So it's funny. The next thing is to me to really focus more on the things I've been doing. I've had podcasts that deal with history, the history of students or alumni who made history at Syracuse University and after Syracuse University. I already have one of my first sets that's been documented by the people who did it. They gave me the okay, you know, to use their voice. And it's going in the Syracuse University archives.
Oh, you live in New Jersey currently.
Yes.
Are you planning on staying up north or moving south like everyone else?
We're moving south. We're looking in the North Carolina area.
Wow.
Originally, we were going to do Florida, but it got crazy. But until
Florida,
then,
crazy?
It depends on who you are.
I'm sure we have listeners of many different ilk.
Oh, no, yeah. And those who are down there trying to survive and keep their culture and, you know, neighborhoods correct. That's their fight. And I understand I'm there for you.
Yeah.
But I can't move it into here to have that fight yet.
Yeah.
I got a grandson who's a mixed culture.
Yeah.
And I'm making sure he has a safe place because
sure.
he's smart as a pistol. He's 2 years old, a little over 2 years old, and he can memorize sentences and words from his favorite books.
Yes. And it's so important, and we started this interview talking about you when you were young, very young kid in Utica, right? So that safe space, that environment is really important.
Definitely.
This has been a fantastic conversation.
Yeah. So much in such little time.
Right, such a little time. So for our listeners who are listening and who may want to learn more about you and some of your initiatives, where can they find you online?
They can find me at my website, officialanotherbenji.net. I have something that I call Blink, B-L-I-N-Q. You'll see my QR code, and that you can see some of the things I've done. And even in, if you go to YouTube, you'll see another Benji production.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Ben, thanks again for coming on. This has been a pleasure.
This has been fun.
I've learned a lot.
Right. We've talked about this, learning more, but there's always more to come.